And welcome to another episode of At Random Podcast. My name's John Wordsworth.
And my name's Rick Timmis.
My name, Jackson Matthews.
And this evening we're going to be bringing you some of the best iOS apps from 2011. This is going to be our first lists show, as it were. Mm. I'm quite excited, actually.
Not our favourites, the best.
Why do I feel that we need a copy of Wizard by Paul Hardcastle to be playing now, you know, from Top of the Pops?
Top of the Pops. They were the days.
Yeah, they were, 1968, my old mate, Dave Lee Travis.
Well, we should do a homage show to Top of the Pops. I used to watch that all the time when I was a kid. And they tore out of our lives.
As long as I don't have to be Jimmy Savile or anything like that. That's the only thing I want to avoid.
Jackson Savile.
Jackie Savile.
Awesome. So we thought we'd bring you... Obviously, we used to do our app reviews on the show, didn't we? So I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to bring a summary of all the apps that we've been using through 2011 on our iPhones, iPads, and other not quite so open platforms. we'll repair this. We'll make up for this in a future show when we do open source top 10 open source apps. Don't worry, Rick. I know you're sweating there. And
I was twitching. I'm going to get all Tourette's on you then.
but regardless of your stance, you can't deny that the App Store has been popular. And there have been over 500,000 apps now that you can buy or get for free on the App Store, with over, well, approximately 20 billion downloads.
I mean, don't get us wrong, there's plenty of crap on there. But, but there's a lot of them.
How do you organise your menus with all those apps on your phone? Who is that person that's downloaded 20 million apps on
Jack.
Their phone?
Jack's found every single free app and downloaded them.
Now I can get all my apps onto one screen.
With your folders?
Yeah, that's right. Put them all on one screen with folders, and then I don't think I'll ever need any more. And if I need to get more, I'll just have to get rid of ones that are there. Because I've got to have it all on one screen now. I hate it when it's looking for it.
Yeah, I've got two screens. I've got one screen with folders on for all my games, and then another one for the rest.
Yeah. There's work, there's play.
Precisely. So that works pretty well. But anyway, so I think we're going to do this in a dramatic top 10 countdown style kind of way.
Okay.
And then we'll finish off the show with a couple of honourable mentions that maybe weren't quite kind of open enough for everyone to use, but we thought might be worth mentioning, yeah?
Yeah, kind of cool ones that don't quite fit into something as dramatic as a top 10.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to stake my reputation on them, but they're pretty swish in their own little way, you know?
That's exactly what you are doing. when you're on At Random, you are staking your reputation.
To a cross. Martyrs that we are here.
So we're going to do a countdown. Is it a countdown or a count up? So are we counting down from 10 to 1 or 1 to 10?
Go from 10 to 1. Let's build up to the...
10 to 1,
okay. So we've actually gone through a scientific process of measuring how each of us likes these apps. So we've ordered these as an aggregate score of the At Random team. So it's official. These are our favourite apps of 2011. So,
I was just going to point out that, of course, this is a little all about opinion. So we've derived this from the opinions of each of us, and one has to remember always that opinions are like arseholes, everybody's got.
And some of them stink.
Oh, brilliant. So do you want to kick off with number 10, Jackson? This was one of yours that you brought to the table.
In 10!
It's a bullseye. Well, at 10, we got Comic Zeal. Now, if you like reading comics, I know there's a lot of comic reader apps out there, but since its update, it's probably the best for me. This one basically lets you organise your comics into by series, and it's got a lovely user interface that you can basically put them into little comic boxes, and that's just irresistible to me on a lovely little wooden background. And it's got a very useful slider function so that you can edit your comic series within the app and like change the order of them, change the series. But yeah, it works much better on an iPhone 4 than it does an iPhone 3G. I can't recommend it enough to somebody who likes reading comics.
The graphics look really good on it on your iPhone 4. The clarity of the graphics were really good, and being able to zoom in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a comic reader at all, really. Although I used to read comics when I was a kid, and didn't really know why I stopped, because I still appreciate them a great deal now.
Yeah.
But I never have the time, really. You know, reading stuff, it's always technical. Yeah. But yeah, that did look like quite a swish little app, really.
It is. I mean, the biggest deal about it for me is the way you can organise it. I mean, to most comic readers are I've got that collector, that geek streak, you know what I mean? So being able to organise them, being able to see them all there, as if you had them it's in the little boxes. I just love that so much. And if one's out of place, because ordering, changing the names so that they fit into the right series and it organises them automatically, doesn't always work. So having something where you can organise them yourself within the app is a big deal. The slider is a relatively new addition, and you can basically take comics, drag them into the slider, then move the slider where you want it to go, which can be a folder within a folder or back up a folder, however you want to organise them, and then you just tell it to deposit the comics that are in there at the time, in that wherever you leave the slider. It's simple, and it looks strange and obscure at first, but it's actually a really simple way to organise them, very effective.
Mm. I really like the look and feel, you know, like the wood background. It does feel like you're flicking through your comics in the comic store.
That's right, that's right.
Or your special archive room with the dehumidified air and your gloves.
And what now? The file types that it reads, there are specific file type you were saying, weren't they?
That's right. It basically reads the main formats that most people store our comics in, which is the CBZ format and the CBR format, which are basically zip files and RAR files, just with the extension changed. So it's not an exotic file type by any means. Anybody who's used the app CDisplay on a PC will be very familiar with them. I'm not sure about PDFs, but I'm pretty sure. I'm confident, I should say, getting less sure as I go, that it can read PDFs as well, if people like that. But to be honest, most people reading comics on computers are going to be using either CBRs or CBZs, because as I say, they're just renamed RAR and zip files.
Right.
Cool. So that was Comic Zeal, and that's £5.49 on the App Store.
Yeah.
And it's available for both the iPhone and the iPad. So.
Yeah, well worth it if you like comics.
N9!
It's another one of yours, Jackson, number 9.
All right, this next one is a game, because you know I've always liked my games. This one is Stupidness 2. I've never played Stupidness 1, I assume it's very similar to this, because the premise isn't particularly deep. But basically, Stupidness 2 is a series of visual tasks, visual puzzles, if you will, and it will ask you some sort of questions that start off being questions and end up being riddles. For example, it will throw up a picture of a chicken, a road, with some seed on the other side, and it will say, make the chicken cross the road. So you start tapping things. And every time you tap the wrong thing or drag the wrong thing, it starts deducting points. And you've got a time to complete this. And then in the end, right, you try all sorts of things like dragging the chicken, you try dragging the seed. And in the end, what you have to do is drag the road underneath the chicken to make it cross the road. And they keep doing things like that. Some of them, some of these tasks, they get quite creative with the facilities of the iPhone. One of them has you looking for an animal that you can't possibly see until you tilt the phone. Tilting the camera and showing another animal you didn't know was there. So some of it's actually quite crafty. Some of them make use of the microphone, some of them make use of the light sensor, but it's always the less obvious solution that you work for, and then they mock you by giving you an IQ score as you go. But it's the quicker you complete them, obviously the higher IQ score you get. But some of it's quite very visually inventive and quite funny. It makes you laugh when you find the less obvious answer. But it's quite clever stuff in its own way, and it's all very cartoonish interface. It's all a lot of fun. If you've got a kid it's very good for keeping them quiet because they get right into it. But
you found that, did you, on yourself, Jack?
Yeah. So I wouldn't stop talking and they gave me this phone. To...
What did it work like on your iPhone 3G?
Not bad at all.
It worked all fine on there.
Graphically, I mean, it's very bright and colourful graphics, but they're very cartoonish, very simple. I mean, the whole thing is very simple. I mean, most of the tasks either involve tapping on things or dragging things out of the way. So there's nothing very involved going on there, but it's clever. They're like visual riddles, if you like. Like, for an example, there was another tap on the green button and you've got a big red button in front of you. So there's only this one thing on screen. How the hell do I do this? And in the end, what you have to do is drag the top button away, and there's another button underneath, and that's the one you tap. It's you're never the obvious solution. That's what I want.
Yeah, so it kind of uses the iPhone interface that you've come to know by using it, and all the features of the iPhone in like weird and unique ways.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of like, I don't know, the meta sort of questions. It's like an IQ test, but it uses a lot of meta elements, really.
Cool, so that sounds really interesting. And that's for the iPhone only. And it's free if you want the kind of regular version, which I guess is a light version. And then the Pro version, which is the full one, costs 69p.
Yeah, the light version is basically just not as many questions. You just get like the first few questions and the other one gives you the rest. But
cool. In eight!
You've been itching to do that whole review. Yeah. Come on, finish up so I can move on. Come on.
So, this one's Linux User and Developer, which is a magazine app. And obviously, this is one of the magazines that I get. I read a few magazines to do with Linux and open source technology. And Linux and User and Developer has been around for a while. It's a British magazine. It was originally put together by Maggie Mia. And it's a good geeky tech mag. The problem I've been having with all of these magazines is that they collect up over time, and I get a bit OCD about these magazines because they've got articles or bits of interesting code in there or whatever and things, and I end up with this massive store of them all racked on the shelves, and of course, you know, at some point they have to go and I have to get rid of them. And and so when I saw this advertised in their magazine, it said, you know, you can get this at LAP for the iPad. So I thought I'll have a look at that and I'll download it. And what it basically allows you to do is it's basically just your magazine rack, really, but you can get all of the stuff that's been published by Linux User and Developer, back copies as well as each issue comes out. And basically the app just loads up and gives you a library, and in there you've got the magazines to buy, which are cheaper than the printed magazine.
Yeah.
So that saves you a little bit of money as well.
It's nice to see, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, and all the ones that you've bought are there available to view, so you can you can look through the old ones and so on and so forth. And of course, it's all sitting there on the iPad, not taking up shelf space and all the rest of it. So for me, I just thought I really liked the idea of being able to continue using my magazines. The ones that I felt were really relevant from back a few issues ago or whatever, I've bought those in the PDF version. So okay, that makes things a little bit more expensive, but I was willing to accept that transition. Because, of course, now, at any moment in time, I can pull up my Linux magazines in that little app.
Sure.
So I thought it was really cool and it worked really, really well for me.
Did you say you could search through your library?
No.
You search one issue at a time?
No, you can't at the moment. And that would make it really awesome. There's a magazine, another magazine I get made in Germany called Linux Magazine. And what they did with their issues was, after about 100 or 150 issues or whatever, they sent out this DVD with all 150 issues on it, and you could put into the search bar whatever you wanted and it'd come up with the articles from the issues.
Oh, lovely.
Now, that's awesome. That would be just so cool as an app. So if, you know, I mean, I would buy that straight away. If Linux Magazine did an iPad app, and in the iPad app, and even if I paid 50 quid for it, for example, and that 50 quid was all the back issues, and it had that search function in it, so I could type Blender tutorial, and it'd go, we've got 6 articles on Blender, which one do you want? And that'd be just awesome, absolutely cool. But the Linux User and Developer Magazine doesn't do that. It's just a magazine shelf. You can look at what you've got there, and it doesn't interact with the mag any more than that.
One day, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the app that they're using has been sold to a whole bunch of magazine distributors who then just load their PDFs in. And so there's a separation between the magazine PDFs and the app itself. And I'm not sure that interaction is there yet.
Oh, cool. So that was Linux user and developer. The app itself is universal and free, and you're looking at about $3.99 an issue?
About $3.99 an issue, yeah, that's right.
And how much are back issues? Are they less or the same?
No, they're all the same.
All
they're
the same
$3.99,
price.
Yeah. There are some what do they call them? Bookazines. They've got a few bookazines that are a bit more expensive, but generally speaking, each issue is $3.99. In seven!
So, with number seven, I brought World of Goo HD to the table. I got this game back on the PC, a year and a half ago when it came out, 2 years ago. I bought it on Steam, and then I bought an indie bundle with it in, and now I've got it on the iPad. So, the World of Goo chaps have had a nice fair share of my pocket money.
Getting one on his smart TV, wouldn't he?
Yeah. But, I've got to say, I think playing it on the iPad is the best experience out of all the machines I've played it on. I played the demo on the Wii when it came out on the Wii as well, but I wasn't going to buy it again. But then I went when I was on the holiday, I got World of Goo and I got it for the plane ride back, and it kept me going for about 3 hours. And it's kind of classic World of Goo gameplay. It hasn't changed at all since the PC version.
What's the basic premise for all the hobos and hermits out there?
I'm assuming, I was assuming you'd all heard of World of Goo, but I could be wrong, you're right. So, basically, in World of Goo, you kind of start off with a small structure, and there's an end point, and then you get all these little blobs of goo, and you move them around with your finger to build kind of a lattice structure. And then you have to try and build this structure out of components, and then hopefully get it close enough to the exit to win. Now, obviously, that sounds simplistic, but actually some of the levels are really weird S-bend-like shapes.
Yeah.
And then you end up getting special bits of goo later, which might float, but you only get three of them, so you have to use them to counterbalance the heavier bits.
Right.
And then there'll be spikes at the edge of the level, and if the goo touches the spike, then it dies. But it's all about kind of, it's very physics-y, you know.
Mm.
Predates Angry Birds by a long way.
Yeah.
And not that it's at all like Angry Birds, but it uses physics as its main gameplay element.
Sure,
it's one of the first games to do it.
It's puzzling though, isn't it? I mean, it's a puzzler in the sense of that you have to try to think about the almost like real world physics dynamics of, you know, flexibility, strength, length, balance, and so on and so forth to construct this thing. And there's something quite childlike about its about its operation, in that it's very simple. But it's the simplicity to solve a complicated problem that seems to appeal. I quite like the look of it. I haven't got a copy of it, but I've seen you playing it a few times and stretching the things and connecting them, and it all wobbling like this. And I'm like, yeah, I could get into that, like, you know.
I guess the real world analogy is like Meccano, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine if you were given a Meccano set and told you to make a piece of Meccano that would go around the S-bend in your toilet or something. You know, you'd be like, what?
I'd do that all by myself. Wouldn't be telling.
So something like that, you know. But it's definitely got that Meccano feel, you're right. It feels like you're building stuff with your fingers.
Yeah, and you build this structure, and it's sort of like creaking under its own weight, and everything's stretching and like bobbing back and forth.
Yeah, that's and it's just, I think it's just a really nice experience, but it's a lot of fun as well.
Sure, yeah.
And that's why it hangs together so well, I suppose, on the iPad, because it's tactile, isn't it? And then you're touching it and manipulating it and all that kind of stuff, which is really...
So that's really cool, and that's World of Goo HD, universal, so it should work on your phone and your iPad, but I'd definitely advise playing it on an iPad if you can. And that's $2.99 in the App Store.
In six! Well, it's me again. This app is an app that I talked about and reviewed actually on an earlier show of At Random, and I was really impressed with it at the time, although I did slate them off for the fact that their subscription interface didn't actually allow you to press the submit button so that you could actually subscribe to it. And I do remember that and thinking that was really funny. But this is The Times, which is basically the newspaper, The Times newspaper for the iPad. The app itself is free and comes with a free 30-day subscription or something like that that you get to start with. And then it's £9.99 a month to subscribe. Now, when I first got it, I was very impressed with it. Really liked the fact that it does a few things, and it does some stuff really well. I mean, it operates really well as a paper. Whether you have it in, you know, landscape, whether the iPad is in landscape or portrait mode, doesn't matter. The interface seems to work really well. And it definitely has... all the kind of tactile stuff that you would expect if you were reading the paper for real. And I think that makes it work very well. The other thing that it does, which is goes a little bit beyond the paper, is that in the evenings, it will sometimes update certain stories and so on and so forth with extra bits when it rebuilds itself, which I quite like that.
Breaking news and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
So there's a 6 p.m. edition, I think. I've seen this, but like at after six o'clock, you sometimes get some news stories updated.
Okay.
But I mean, well, I quite like the Times newspaper anyway for the news that it reports and so on and so forth. And I've been using the app now for probably probably a year, I would think, that I've had it. And the reason why I put it in the top 10 is because consistently, at the end of every month, I think, at the beginning of every month, after I've just subscribed, I go, I'll just have one more month and subscribe. Because it's $9.99, I think that's quite a lot of money. I'll just have one more month. And then it comes up and it says, your subscription's run out to read more, do you want to buy it? I'll just have one more month. And I'm a year in now, I'll just have more, and I've been reading the Times for a year. And and it's really good. One of the other things I like about the app that you can't simply get with the paper is two aspects to the media. First of all is the pictures that come on the pages. You can hit them and they go up into full screen,
right,
and look at them in full screen. Other stories where the photographers have taken a series of shots, you can flick them and you can gallery through them. So you could look at half a dozen shots of something to support a story, which obviously you can't do with the paper.
Yeah,
and of
sure.
course you can embed YouTube media straight into it. So if there's a news story or something, you can just click on it and there's the news story or the latest footage. And that just gives, it really adds a new dynamic to the paper.
Yeah.
And then the final thing is this mission I'm trying to get on. I'm trying to get paperless if I could. So my magazines are now PDFs, my newspapers are now PDFs on the iPad, and that's a bit more sustainable, I think, and a bit more green. Although, of course, when you send an iPad to landfill, that's probably counts for a lot against all the thousands of trees you wipe out with the Times. But
who would do such a thing, though?
But hopefully you wouldn't. Exactly, you wouldn't. So I really like it for that reason. As I say, basically it's just the Times newspaper, but it's on the iPad in a format that's readable. And
more than readable, it sounds very nice, very interactive.
What I thought was pretty cool as well is you can do the crossword still.
Yes,
oh,
can you?
I wondered about that.
Yeah,
I think that's you know, when you realise that you don't want to be more depressed by the newspaper, I'd always go, oh, I'm done with this now. Crossword.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they've managed to cram the crossword and Sudoku into the app. That's
it's
a great idea. Cool, so that's the Times app, and that's for the iPad only. And it's free, but you will need to pay the £10 a month subscription. Past your first month, I think you get them. No, you
first
get a week for free or something, don't you?
No, I thought it was 30 days that you got for free, the first month for free. But maybe it is a week free. Maybe it is a week that you... John, I think you might be right. I think it is a week free that you get. So that was a mistake. I said 30 days earlier on. I think you get a week free, and then you can then subscribe for a month after that. In five!
So in five, we've got an app called Goodreader. Now, on the surface, this seems like a pretty straightforward app. And it is essentially a PDF reader. So it can view all sorts of files. It can view pictures, and you can play audio. I think you can even watch your videos from it. But essentially, I think it's kind of built as a PDF reader. And it has all this stuff on the side, which is kind of cool. The real magic of Goodreader is that it will connect to things like Dropbox, or you can type in a URL and it will just collect all your files together. So it's pretty cool if you've got a Dropbox account, then you can start throwing all your PDFs and your ebooks in there. And when you want to read them, you haven't got to go through any complicated syncing process. You can simply tap on the Dropbox icon, it brings up a file browser, go through your Dropbox files, tap on the one you want, it will just download it straight to the app. It can download a collection at a time, so if you've got six that you want, just tap all six, wait 3 or 4 minutes for it to download them, and then off you go. And it's a tabbed reader, so you can have multiple PDFs open at one moment in time.
Something you couldn't do just through the iOS interface.
Precisely, yeah.
I can imagine a lot of people saying, oh, what's the big deal? It just reads PDFs, my iPhone can read PDFs. But you could, with the tab browsing and the centralized data, like having it all in your Dropbox or something like that, that's the real sell for it, isn't it?
So iBook can read PDFs, you're right. But Goodreader have actually written their own PDF renderer. So you can choose to use the built-in iPhone one. Or you can use their one, and their one seems to be much more efficient. So it renders the PDFs in about half the time. So in some of these complex PDFs that I go through, I can flick through the pages, whereas in iBooks, I have to wait about 2 seconds for a page to render. So that was the clincher for me. So it's got some other cool features, like you can actually annotate the PDFs.
Oh, really?
So you can select a bit of text, push the highlight button, and then tap on the comment button and leave a comment next to it. Either a pop-up comment or is one in the text. So if someone sent you some, you know, some schoolwork or something to read over, or you know, a paper, then you can just comment on it and send them back the PDF. And then when they open it up in Preview on a Mac or presumably an Acrobat Reader too, all those comments appear. So it's quite useful in that respect.
That's what sets it apart, I think, isn't it? That kind of being able to annotate and drop things in there and then send them back to people, that makes a big difference.
Makes it a little bit more powerful than just being a reader, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it does. But it had it's got a really groovy interface as well. I liked a lot of the interface was very intuitive when you first look at it. The icons are fairly straightforward as to what they're going to do and so on and so forth. And I like the fact that you can interact with the PDF almost like it's a read-write document. You can copy bits and section and highlight and so on and so forth. so much so that I went and got a copy. Very impressed with it. So
that's good reader. The only downside to it is actually the iPhone and the iPad app are separate. So if you want it on both, you have to buy it twice. But it is primarily useful on the iPad. So I'd advise getting it for the iPad, and that's $2.99 on each platform. So.
In four!
All right, number four. The last thing I want to do is help the banks out in any way. But number four is basically the mobile banking apps for NatWest and RBS, which I'm told is very similar, because you use it, don't you, Rick?
RBS one. Well, they're both the same group, aren't they, RBS and NatWest?
And they've obviously been using the same technology for both. Now, recently, this app has had an update, and in my eyes, it's pretty much perfect now for its purposes. I mean, usually when I'd be doing my online banking, I'd have to log into a website, which isn't always practical. I mean, a lot of the time, you're away from a computer when you want to do your online banking anyway, aren't you? It's something you want to do on the move. You don't sit down to do... It's just inconvenient. It's always inconvenient. But the mobile phone app is just really, really slick and minimal. And it just displays just the numbers that you need to see. If you have several accounts, you can very easily swipe between different accounts, which, again, is just really, really smooth. You can see, like, your statement of all your recent transactions. And probably best of all, you can do balance transfers with about two or three button presses between your accounts. And recently, this is what makes it perfect for me, is that you can make payments to any of your payees that you've already set up in online banking. And just whacking the numbers, pick your payee, push a button, whoosh, off it goes. And once you've set up your security and your passcode to log into the app, you set that up once, and then every time you log in, you just whack in a number, it's something like six digits, and that takes you straight into your account. So it's so much faster than even trying to log in online with all this, your third letter of your password, first letter of your password, all that stuff.
I was going to say, it sounds even easier than using your desktop.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's far more streamlined. It's much less clutter. It's a really simple, attractive interface that's very, very nice to use. I mean, I find it immensely convenient. So...
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously got some experience using the RBS one, not as much as Alison has, because she used it more frequently than that, but I've seen her transfer money to people whilst I'm on the phone. So I'm on the phone talking to one of our suppliers, for example, who's saying, we haven't been paid in this and the other, and giving me a hard time.
Yeah.
And then she's turned to me and gone,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, my God, she's efficient. How did she do that? And that's when she said, oh, I've been using this app, and she was able to transfer the money like that. So, it is really useful. And I think, you know, you need to be in touch with your bank account. You've got to know, it's the heartbeat of what's going on. You've got to know what's going on. And that, you know, straight away, immediate live balance, there you go.
There's the numbers. There's the numbers.
So, yeah, it is really cool. And it's really nice that the banks have made something so convenient, like, you know.
I mean, and it is truly convenient. I mean, it only does what you need it to, and there's nothing else cluttering it up. I mean, it just feels like they've made a real effort for the user. I can't imagine not using it, to be honest. It's just so quick to get something done with it.
Cool. So if you're fortunate enough to be a NatWest or RBS RBS client, which I'm not, unfortunately, I'm with Smile Internet account. Hopefully you'd like to think the Smile Internet Bank would get an app sorted pretty swish, so I'll keep an eye out for that.
Well, if you're not, then move. You know, everybody should take an account with Royal Bank of Scotland. Well, preferably NatWest, actually, because Santander are going to take over the RBS accounts momentarily very soon. So don't do that. Go to NatWest.
Run.
Yeah, absolutely. And get your money to NatWest, because you can get a great app from NatWest. And of course, remember that all profits go to the taxpayer. Because, they should do, because we own most of NatWest and RBS now, don't we?
So those are the NatWest and RBS apps. Now they're essentially exactly the same. So if you're one of those two banks, that's great. And that's universal, works on both your iPhone and your iPad, and it's free.
Free.
In three.
At number three is another one of my games, Speedball 2 Evolution. This was more or less graphically a port of the Amiga and ST versions of Speedball 2, which was basically a top-down game where it's a ball game set in the future where you basically try and hammer your way through the opposing team to throw a ball into a goal. But the setting and the graphics all tied really nicely together, because they had the futuristic body suits that the players would be wearing, and you could upgrade their bionics and like buy yourself new players, and there was all kinds of like lovely little things on the pitch for enhancing your players through power ups and the like. But this is not just a complete carbon copy of the original game, because they've upgraded elements of the graphics and added like little touches here and there, but without deviating from the original graphics style. I mean, a lot of it you could be forgiven for thinking that it's a complete copy. It does look like they've had a slight retweak in some areas. The graphics don't look quite the same as they did. They're exactly the same style, but they're not exactly the same graphics. And I remember, because I've got one of them funny memories with this kind of thing. But it's definitely a very faithful recreation, shall we say, that works surprisingly well on an iPhone. I mean, I thought the control system would really let it down, but again, it works. It works very well. It's not too obtrusive, and they're surprisingly controllable. I'm trying to think what else they've added to it, but to be honest, I think that's basically the gist of it. It's got all the player transferring and selling that it always had before, and all the power ups are intact. No, it's really, really nostalgia fest, to be honest.
I must admit, I mean, I've not played the game and I don't have the game myself, but and earlier on we talked about another app where it had retro graphics that looked a bit sort of Commodore 64-ish or whatever, and the graphics just didn't work in that framework for me. But Speedball 2, the graphics do work. They totally remind me of the Amiga.
Yeah.
The days of the Amiga, and the retro style graphics on the device just make it look. It looks really attractive. You know, I don't know where. And you've got the eye for the graphics. I don't understand how that works, but I just look at it and go. My eye says, "Does that look like eye candy to me?"
Yeah.
And it does to me. I just like it. I like the little bloke, all the little characters, and everything else about it just shines. It, even though it's retro, it looks shiny, doesn't it? And that makes the game look attractive, I think.
Yeah, I think Speedball 2 Evolution on the iPad is stunning.
Yes, yes, it works really well on the iPad too, doesn't it?
They've done a really good job, like you say. I think what the magic is they've taken the kind of the retro look and feel, but it's not pixelated.
No.
It's not like they've gone, haha, retro, that means tiny resolution and stretch it up. They've actually redrawn everything to be high def, but in the original style.
Yeah.
So it looks stunning. And with the iPad, you get that extra space on the screen, so your thumbs aren't in the way. So on the phone, it's a little bit of a... as most of these games with joysticks are on the phone.
Yeah.
But on the iPad, you're only using a fraction of the screen to control it. All the high-res graphics can really shine on that nice 10-inch screen. And like you say, what a great nostalgia fest.
Yeah, that's right. There is one thing I do have to mention. If this doesn't sell it for you, nothing will. There's this thing that the players have. They have this like little energy meter. And as they take hits through the course of the match, because it's like futuristic American football, they're all slugging each other. So if one of the players takes enough hits, suddenly the match will stop and the camera will pan over to where he's fallen over, and there'll be this ambulance sounds, and it'll say that the player's out of the match, he's been injured, and these little ambulance robots will come onto the pitch and drag him away, and you get points for it. I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, it's stunning. If you remember the original or not, I guarantee you'll enjoy it. And that is Speedball 2 Evolution, a And that's available for both the iPhone and the iPad, and it's £2.99 hard-earned pennies.
Into!
So, our number two app, one away from the number one, is one of the ones that we actually talked about 6 months ago, I think, on that random show.
Yeah, we did.
And this is Zinio, and it's a magazine delivery platform, I guess, for the iPhone and iPad. So it's a bit like iTunes, where you get to browse through what they've got available and pick what you want, only there's tons and tons and tons of magazines available, and they're all, I'd say, a bargain price, to be honest. They're pretty well priced if you buy them one issue at a time. But if there's something which you like Edge magazine, that's one of my current reads.
I used to like Edge, yeah.
Yeah, then you can actually get a subscription, so you can get the whole year's worth at probably about half, if not less, than the shelf price.
Right.
So, it's about £24, I think, for a year's worth of Edge magazine, which is well worth it. And it's just a nice app. It's fairly straightforward, but it's definitely swish. You go to the store, you buy the app magazines that you like, then you open it up in the read tab, and you can just flick through. And what's pretty cool is you can copy and paste the text out of the magazines. So.
Oh, okay. So you're not just looking at scans then?
No. So it's actually a PDF type magazine.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've had it for a while now, and I would say support everything you've just said there, John. I mean, it's an electronic news store, really. It's like kind of having WH Smith's just on your iPad, and hence the reason why I scored it so high as well. I've got copies of several magazines, and earlier on in this show I talked about the reason for that, taking the magazines, the paper out of storing things, and being able to have all of this stuff here. So I've got like New Scientist on here, and Net Magazine, I've got a subscription to Web User. Most of the mags that are out there seems to be loads of them listed on Zinio. You can just find loads and loads and loads of stuff, all kind of, particularly all the geek mags and tech mags and stuff like that. And again, you know, it's dead convenient. I mean, I'm just looking here, and I hadn't looked in this for a while. This is my subscription to Web User that we're looking at here. And, you know, if I go back to the main menu for that, you can see that I don't quite know what to press.
Hang on. That was the page view, yeah. So you can look at all the pages on a nice...
So yeah, you can pull it into, you can, like you say, you can draw out the text, or you can flip out all the pages into a gallery and look at that. You can see here, this demonstrates what's happening. Like, I've got a number of subscriptions, and I've got four new ones here that are ready for me to download when I next come in here and start having a look. And the subscriptions just automatically present themselves there to you. It's just a really, really good app. And of course, you've got all your old copies.
Yeah.
So where I would normally have a stack of these next to the bed or in the magazine rack or whatever, I don't need that anymore. I've just got my iPad, and I've got all those copies there. And I can keep them for as long as I like. They're never going to go away. And I really like that. That makes me feel like I've got some value. And at the end of the day, they're always cheaper than they are on the newsstand. So.
Sure.
And what's really cool is you can, once you've got your sign-in, you can log in on your desktop, on your phone, on your iPad, on your Android tablet, on your laptop. There's apps for all of them, and you can just get access to the same content, which is really cool.
Yeah. It's a really cool app. And the app itself is free, isn't it? It's only the content that you pay for.
Zinio is free, and you can download, I think there's a couple of sample magazines, so if you want to give it a try, they're girly ones. But
what?
The magazines, I can't remember what they were, but there's a free couple of magazines that you get when you download.
All lifestyle stuff, I suppose.
Yeah.
We should tell Jeremy Clarkson that. He's on the cover of one of them. One of these girly magazines.
but it's definitely worth having a download of and playing with it. And I'm pretty sure if you read magazines in paper form, you'll get hooked. So that's Zinio, and that's for, well, everything, but today, the iPad.
In one! Okay, so this app is called Magnatune, and the app itself is free to download from the App Store. And, basically, it's kind of like a We're Not Evil Spotify. is probably the way to approach it. So the app supports Magnatune.com, which you'll know from listening to our shows. Magnatune is a Creative Commons licensed music store, if you like, that operates a share-alike policy. So artists who are not signed and not got publishing deals who are trying to get their music out to the masses, and it is of good enough studio level quality to do that, can publish their material through Magnatune. Now, you can listen to Magnatune tracks completely free. There is no subscription fees required at all, and you can listen to as many tracks as many times as you like, play as many albums as you like, and listen to as much of the music that's on there as you like. And I think there's something like 12,000 albums on there, and several thousand artists as well, across all different genres, from rock, jazz, blues, classical, ambient, trance, whatever you might like, rap, hip-hop, etc. All of that music is available through the Magnatune app. On top of that, you get, like you would with a radio station, in between songs, you get, this song is brought to you by Magnatune. Magnatune, and you get these little adverts. But if you take a subscription out, and the subscription is not very much money at all, it's probably about £20 or £30 a year or something like that. It's not a huge amount. If you take a subscription out, those adverts are removed, so you don't hear any of those at all. You get you can tune into the subscribers channel. But beyond that, once you've done that, you can then download and keep as many of the albums as you like. For that one subscription fee. The great thing that I think makes it work really, really well is that they share the revenue. So they split the revenue between themselves and the artist. And it's a fairly equal share. I think it is an equal share, actually, that they get. And so the artist will benefit a lot more than they would through a traditional publishing route, where they might only get 5 or 10% of the fees. And of course, this helps support musicians who are trying to get a foothold in the market, which is largely dominated. And so my motivation for sticking this in number one was, A, I just think it's fantastic to be able to get access to all of these different and obscure artists that you haven't heard before.
Yeah.
The model just fits with the whole kind of new world way of approaching things, this internet way of being able to share things more equally rather than one person centrally dominating, and that makes a big difference to me. And so you get this kind of altruistic feel-good factor as well, because you take your subscription out, you listen to the tunes, you download and use the tunes for like we do on a podcast, knowing that you're completely at liberty to do that. The licensing prescribes that you can do that.
Yes.
You can recommend that other people download the tunes and use them and copy them if they like. And at the same time, the artists are getting a kickback for their efforts and being paid for it.
That's right.
It's just mega. What a mega awesome business model.
Yeah. And as an added bonus, the app's icon looks like a middle finger, which I assume is aimed at Spotify.
Yeah, I think I can only agree with everything you said there. I think, well, the app itself isn't perfect. I think it deserves the number one top spot for the ethos it's pushing out and the whole model. You know, I think Magnatune's brilliant. We've been using them on our podcast now for about 9 months. Well-deserved number one spot, I think.
Yeah.
Cool, so to wrap up the show, we do have a couple of honourable mentions, kind of like the red-headed stepchildren that didn't quite make it into the top 10 for whatever reason.
Suddenly Rooster Klondike comes to mind. Come on there, boy, what's you going on there, Sean?
So I'm going to kick off with one that's it's actually quite an expensive app, and it's really specialised, hence it didn't make it into my sort of top 10 list, as it were. But I'm going to bring iLureBox to the table. Now, this is an app which allows you to script Lua on your iPhone or iPad and basically learn the scripting language right within that device. So you can script I'll say apps, but obviously they're not really apps. And you buy the base app for £6.99, and then you can buy these toolboxes. So you can buy the GUI toolbox, and then the socket toolbox, so you can do some network programming. The SQL toolbox, if you need to connect to a database. I think the device toolbox gives you the ability to use certain extra parts of the device, which you wouldn't necessarily have access to. So like the microphone and things.
Mm-hmm.
But it lets you create little bits of software out of Lua script. And now, while I wouldn't necessarily say that the what you produce is going to be fantastic, I think it's a learning experience. If you want to learn Lua because you need that scripting experience for something, then what better way to do it than on your iPad while you're on a train or something?
So I need to get a little bit of background here because I'm kind of missing the turkey on this Lua stuff. I've come across it because I play Vendetta Online.
Yeah.
And obviously you can write all kinds of control things and functions on your ship in Lua and so on and so forth. But I've done programming of various different things. What would you like in Lua 2? Is it like writing C or Python or... Bash?
Yeah, I haven't played with Lua all that much, and I'm still in the kind of the learning phases with it, really. It's a bit unfair to say that, but in my head, I guess I would liken it a bit to JavaScript. It always appears as an embedded language in something else. But okay. I say always, I mean nearly always. Obviously, in this case, it's embedded into kind of a shell of an app. But in the same way that you'd normally use JavaScript because it's embedded in a web page, Lua will nearly always be embedded within something else. So in your example, it's embedded in the client for Vendetta. But it's embedded in a whole bunch of things. So while the language itself is really quite simple, just has the basic kind of constructs and mathematics in it, it's really easy to embed Lua into any iPhone app as a developer. So you can embed the API in, expose a couple of classes, and then the Lua has instant access to that class and all its methods.
Okay.
So you know, the actual programmer's code is basically just link in Lua, go, I want it to access these four objects, go. And then the Lua itself, or the Lua script you've got, can then kind of poke the objects and do anything with that data. So.
Okay.
So it is really powerful. And it, like I say, I mean, this app really is useful, if you want to learn Lua.
Right.
And play with it and have an example of using it.
It's not for the casual market, then.
No, precisely. Hence it didn't get into the top 10. And it is a little bit clunky. And I wouldn't say it's their fault, because the Apple restrictions on apps say that you can't deliver executable code to another device. So I think it's not possible for you to export a Lua script and then put it somewhere else.
Right, okay.
You have to copy paste the text into an email, email it to someone, then copy and paste it back into the window.
Right.
And again, that's not their fault. That's the best they can do within the Apple guidelines, but it is another reason why it didn't make it into the top 10. But that's iLuaBox.
Cool.
If you're looking to learn Lua, it's brilliant.
Sounds pretty good.
For all you Lua lovers.
Maybe if I get back to playing Vendetta Online, which might not happen given that I've been completely addicted to iRacing. Maybe then I know certainly there were a few people out there in Vendetta that were kicking my butt because they'd got Lua tools, that stuff that allowed them to... They'd got scripts where they could just target me and go, scan his cargo. And it'll just tell you. And then, oh, look, he's got a good cargo, blow him up, nick it. Well, you know, hang on a minute.
Everyone should have that, or no one should have that.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a few people doing stuff like that. But yeah, there we go. Well, I want to mention and also mention here, you know, we've all worked on this to some degree. Obviously, for obvious reasons, because of conflict of interest, we certainly couldn't warrant putting it in a top 10, but I wanted to talk about it because I think that over the last 18 months we've done quite a lot of work on this and it's been quite good, and maybe we should perhaps do a show about developing apps and at some point. But I want to talk about an app called iSAM Mobi, which is published by our company, Abazanda Limited, and basically it's a business application that allows you to connect to your customer relationship management system, so like Sugar CRM is one of the servers that you can connect to, and of course you can also connect to the iSAM Intelligent Sales and Marketing, which is a business suite, a business database suite that businesses use for managing their marketing and customers and clients, etc., and that's produced by Abazanda as well. And what the app does is give you access to all of that business information and business data on your iPhone or your iPad. Now, the reason why it gets a mention is because, of course, obviously, John has worked on, you've worked on the development of that and developed all of the app. Jack's worked on the interface styles and different designs, and obviously I've worked on some of the business logic and the general kind of constructs on it. And over the last 18 months, we've released a few iterations of that. And it'd be really cool if you know, if there are people out there that are using these kinds of tools in businesses and perhaps listening to the show, it'd be really great to get some feedback from them. Maybe they could download. There are free versions available, so you know, you could download the free version and plug it into a Sugar CRM system or into your database system and have a look at it and maybe give us a little bit of feedback. That'd be really cool if people let us know what they thought, etc. But really, I wanted to mention it just because a lot of hard work's gone into it, you know, to producing the app, and it's out there in the marketplace. And well, we've got a job. It's our job to promote it. You know?
What's really good about it is that not only do we make it, we're using it.
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
So it's not like you're bringing it up just as a selling point. It's actually probably the most used app on your iPad.
It is the most used app on my iPad. Yeah, I use it all the time because I'm out and about. Well, particularly this month through January, I'm actually on a mission at the moment through January to have a mobile month, and I'm gonna probably write an article about this. But I wanted to test this idea of can you run and manage a business in an agile way? So without any offices, without any infrastructure, just flying around on mobile devices. You know, you've got a laptop in your bag and your iPad and your phone. Can you run a business in that scenario? You know, and so far we're in what 12 odd days in. And that's working really, really well. And iSAM Mobi gets used a lot because I want to look at the customers' details. I want to find out what we were saying to customers. I mean, I had it out on a laptop at a client's this morning, looking at the previous meetings and seeing what was going on, all the notes there on my iPad in live in real time.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it gets hammered, and it's a very reliable app, so it's cool.
So that's iSAM Mobi, or iSAM Mobi Lite, if you would like the free read-only version. And that's available on the App Store for both the iPhone and iPad. $14.99 for the full version, or free for the read-only version.
Yeah.
Cool. So our last honourable mention, Jackson.
Yeah, this is a bit of a specialised one, but useful to anybody working in graphic design or working with images a lot. It's a Photoshop PSD viewer. And I first started looking for an app like this when I found that I couldn't look at a PSD file on my phone. I wanted to show it off to somebody, but it was still at the PSD stage, a Photoshop file. So I wanted something that could just basically look at it. All I wanted to do was look at it. And fortunately, there was an app for it. And basically, all this does is just show the PSD to you. From there, you can export it to a JPEG if you want to send it somewhere else. But that's basically all it does. It ties up nicely with your Dropbox. If you have your PSDs in your Dropbox, then you can open them into PSD Viewer directly from there. It's had a couple of updates, so it's a lot smoother than it used to be. Again, it's very limited in what it does. But it's the only app I've seen that does it and does it well. So if you are a graphic designer, graphic artist in any way, or if you just have this this gap on your phone that you need to fill with a PSD viewer, then I can't recommend this one enough. Very limited, not much, not very exciting, but I'm easily excited.
Awesome. Yeah, but it does a job and it does it well.
That's, you know, it.
And that simplicity is what makes a good app, isn't it?
That's right. It just feels a bit of a niche gap in the tools on an iPhone. It's nice to see something that opens up those more obscure files, you know?
Mm.
And it's only 69p.
Yeah, that's right.
So if that's a need that you have, that is a bargain price, isn't it?
I mean, there's a light free version, but come on.
Oh, brilliant. So that's it. That's our top 10 apps of 2011.
Yeah.
We won't talk about apps again for another 12 months.
Yeah.
Well, not for the iPhone, maybe Android apps next, you know?
Yeah.
Or some open source software. I think we should do an open source software list.
Yeah, I was wondering about tablets as well. We did do a show where we looked at some tablets, probably went through about half a dozen or so when it was very early to market. But there's loads of tablet devices out there in all kinds of different guises now. And I think each one of us in our own right has done a certain amount of research. And I know, well, between me and you and John and Jack, we've got about 6 or 7 of these different devices. So we've certainly got enough experience of using them to maybe do one like that. But anyway, what I would say is this has been interesting doing a top 10. So if you've got something out there that you want us to do a top 10 on or take a look at, or if indeed you've got a particular piece of software or something you want us to take a look at and to talk about on the show, then get in touch with us. Email us show at atrandom.org. And of course, let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. Give us some ideas. It'd be great to hear from you.
And if you didn't get the hint, we're doing a top 10 tablet show maybe in a few months' time. We only have 6 at the moment, so if you want to send us a tablet, and then we'll probably put it in the top 10.
You might even put it in the top 5.
Somebody sends me a Motorola 86 and a lap dog, I'll probably put that in the top 1. That'd be really cool. Well, fantastic. Well, I'm going to close off. That's enough from me. I talk too much anyway. I am Rick Timmis, and signing off and signing out.
And this has been Jackson Matthews reminding you that there is no such thing as opinion. It's at random.
And I've been John Wordsworth, and I'm going to leave you this evening with another track from Magnitude, Nova Express, I'm Alive.